Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Thanks for listening to the latest Football Digest podcast, available on all podcast platforms. Subscribe now through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from, so you don't miss a single episode.
Good morning and welcome to the Football Digest podcast. Myself and Andy Dunn joining you, and we're going to look really forward to this weekend. Liverpool-Manchester City, what an absolute key game this is in the title race. An incredible clash between two of the title titans, really. And that could be on the back of Arsenal going first this week. They went last weekend, facing Brentford on Saturday night, when Arsenal have the chance to go top and then lay down the gauntlet to the others, really. And we'll look also at the other sort of Premier League games, really. Man United v Everton, pressure on both teams, really, to get a result there. And also Tottenham against Aston Villa in that battle for fourth place. We still don't know whether fifth will be good enough for a Champions League place. But let's start, Andy, shall we, with Liverpool-Man City. It's a huge game for both, isn't it, really? But I don't know, is it more important for Liverpool to win this game, or is it more important for City? City haven't been particularly effective at Anfield in recent seasons, have they? And it was a draw at the Etihad earlier in this campaign. So who does it matter to most, or is it just huge across the board?
Well, it's just big. I mean, you have to remember, after this game, you know, whatever gap it might be, whoever might be ahead, there's still going to be 10 games left in the season. You know, and 10 games, 30 points. It's a lot of points, a lot of games left in other competitions. So it won't be defining. You know, whoever wins it, you know, will get an edge from that game. But I don't think it'll be in any way a defining game in the title race. I think there's still many, many twists and turns to go after that. I guess, from Liverpool's point of view, they could probably, if they had a cushion over City of 4 points coming out of this, then with 10 games to go, you know, these teams aren't dropping many points in games that they that they are expected to win. That's what you found in recent weeks, is that obviously all three teams are doing what they need to do, and they're getting wins over teams that they are expected to win. So if you think the Liverpool would have a four-point gap over Manchester City with 10 games to go, then, you know, they could afford one or two slip-ups, which they're not showing many signs of doing at the moment. But having said that, you know, I think it would be, for Liverpool, it would be a huge, huge morale, when I say boost, they don't need their morale boosting because they're doing so well. But what they would then look back on their games over the last couple of weeks. You know, Klopp said I was there on Saturday against Forest, and Klopp said after that game, he said, if you'd have told me 12 days ago, which was when the injuries got particularly serious, when it was after the Brentford game down at Brentford, Mohamed Salah and Darwin Nunez were both injured in that game, as was Curtis Jones, as was Diogo Jota. He said, if you'd have said to me after that game that you would then go four games and win four times, he said, you know, I wouldn't have believed you. And in other words, if they could then come out of winning those games against the odds in terms of their depleted squad and then beating City, you know, it would just be a huge momentum shift. If City were to win, it would just be, I wouldn't say expected, because they're not expected to win at Anfield, but it would be more along the lines of, well, they're just doing what City always do. I think from Liverpool's point of view, it would be huge. And it would be, you know, every game at Anfield now takes on an extra, you know, and we know the atmosphere can be fantastic there anyway, but every game at Anfield now takes on an extra edge, an extra bit of emotion, because, of course, you're counting down the days to Liverpool versus, I think it's Wolverhampton Wanderers, in the last game. Is it Wolves? Or I can't remember. Anyway, in the last game of the season at Anfield, they're counting down. This is Klopp's farewell. You know, this will be, you know, it'll be down to like probably half a dozen games. Again, I'm not sure exactly how many. It depends how far they go European-wise. But, you know, this will be the countdown again. So there'll be an extra edge, as if Liverpool City needs an extra edge, because it's developed that edge in recent years. You know, not always pleasant, it has to be said, off the pitch. But it will be absolutely, you know, buzzing Anfield on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, it would be an amazing weekend if at the end of it, Arsenal have won, the other two have drawn, and it feels like they'd almost be, you know, pretty level pegging with 10 games to go. I mean, it would just be astonishing at that point. The one thing, Andy, I don't know whether, you know, you might agree or not, is that basically Liverpool just seem to have collected these injuries. And basically, you know, they've got so many players out and they're obviously doing amazing things without, but it feels like, my God, they're having to push themselves to get over the line. And that's what you need to do. And they know what it takes. But at what point does it become, you know, a sort of a real, because obviously they've got the trip midweek to Prague for Europa League. And it's really going to test their reserves, isn't it?
It is, but they've come through. You know, just to repeat, I was at the City Ground on Saturday, and they did bring on that game, as we all know, because he scored the winning goal. They brought on Nunes. They brought on Szoboszlai. They brought on Endo. You know, now they're three key players all coming back into action. Endo had only been missing for a game or two, as had Nunes. Three key players coming back into action. I fully expect Mohamed Salah to be back in action sooner rather than later. So actually, they may well be, and, you know, on behalf of Liverpool fans, you know, touch wood, they may well be over the worst. Alisson's clearly not coming back until after the international break. Neither is Curtis Jones or Diogo Jota, who might well be out for the season. But, you know, with respect to Jones and Jota, they are important players, but they're not absolutely key players. They're not the marquee players such as Salah. The and Alisson that you want back. So I think that might well be over it. I mean, Klopp will certainly want to, as uplifting the story it was about the youngsters, Klopp will certainly be mindful that he doesn't want to rely on them in this running. You know, he will want senior players back. And the signs they are coming back. And the thing is as well, but with what I do find has happened with Liverpool is that also everything that could have gone for them has gone for them, you know. And I've done most of their games recently. And obviously, you were alongside me at the Carabao Cup final. And realistically, in that last 20 minutes, Chelsea should have won the game in normal time. They missed plenty of chances when they could have won it. I was at the Southampton game in the FA Cup. At Southampton, Russell Martin made eight changes, yet still Southampton for the first 20 minutes probably should have been two up, but somehow they didn't do it. And then again, against Forest, we saw Anthony Elanga miss a couple of great chances, and then the controversy over Paul Tierney dropping the ball to Liverpool rather than Forest, and then a winner in the 99th minute. So in a way, and Klopp almost acknowledged this, he said, I can't believe it. You know, everything has fallen for Liverpool, as well as them showing great character and the youngsters being great. But now I think what he needs, and you're quite right to refer to it, he needs those senior players back. And the way signs they are coming back. And I think Klopp, with one eye on the difficult and on the finale and on these type of difficult fixtures with one eye on them. I think he's been ultra cautious probably in his treatment of Nunes and Salah and other players. And I think you'll see them come to the fore against City and against in the running now in April and May.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Klopp v. Pep, he could. I mean, it, let me think. It might not. I guess we have got potential yet in the FA Cup, but it could be their last meeting. Where does that rank as a managerial rivalry? I mean, I think Guardiola's an absolute tactical genius. Klopp is the absolutely epitome of a really passionate, incredibly motivational manager, isn't he? And I know two different styles, two different characters, but my God, they've pushed each other, haven't they?
Yeah, and as you say there, I mean that's a brilliant thing. They are two contrasting characters. Well, when I say contrasting, they're similar in that they bring like a lot of elite managers do, they bring an intensity to the job that is just remarkable. You know, that they really do, the passion. I've been watching little trailers from the City documentary they've sold to Netflix now. And, you know, Pep's not just a master tactician. He's clearly a brilliant motivator as well, the same way as Klopp is. And, you know, don't underestimate how tactically aware and astute Jurgen Klopp is. You know, you don't get to where he's got and won what he's won without being that. Yeah, and their rivalry has just been fantastic. Based on respect, you know, I mean, I do think both of them, you know, in terms of, for example, attitude towards officials have been a little bit excessive at times. I didn't like Klopp not shaking hands, for example, with Chris Cavana after the Carabao Cup, and Pep, I think, has been equally, not great towards officials. However, between them, the football they produce, the games they produce between the two, the rivalry, you know, I think Pep will look back at it and think, you know, that rivalry head-to-head, it's fairly level, isn't it, I think, over their entire career. Klopp maybe just getting the better. I can't remember the head-to-head stats right now. But when you look back at what Guardiola has achieved in England and what Klopp has achieved, then Guardiola has the upper hand. You know, he's won more, simple as that. But they pushed each other to heights, you know, in those seasons where 90-odd points wasn't enough for Liverpool to win the title. Remarkable stuff. And more importantly, they've given us two teams playing slightly different but unbelievably exciting football.
No, they've been absolutely fantastic. Where's it? Will Arsenal play first against Brentford, stuck six past Sheffield on Monday night. Arsenal, I still think they're probably viewed by most people outside basically as the outsider in the three. Is that fair?
Do you think they are viewed as the outsider now? I'm not sure. I mean, I guess the bookmakers, certainly last time I looked, had them as outsiders, only just really. It's probably fair in the sense that, you know, in more recent times, and whether this should carry any store or not, I'm not entirely certain, but, you know, in more recent times, clearly City are favourites because they've got the experience of winning it four out of the last five seasons. Liverpool, you know, probably have more experience of winning silverware, well, they do, in recent years than Arsenal. But those players have moved on now, and this Arsenal team looks a different proposition from the one that ended last season. So I would, I guess that's right because of them not having done it recently, but, you know, there's got to be not much in it. It's such a tough one to call. You know, I mean, I stick by Liverpool because I thought Liverpool would win the title before the ball was kicked this season. I stick by Liverpool because I think Klopp has that momentum going now. I think him leaving does bring an extra factor to it. I think they've got characters in that team who will pull them through. But I mean, but they're the only reasons I stick with Liverpool. Otherwise, you know, if someone said they couldn't call it between all three, then I could fully understand that. Such tough, isn't it? So tough, isn't it? I mean, Arsenal are playing so well, and yeah, to the extent, John, where I look at Saturday's game, Arsenal Brentford, and okay, you know, Brentford as well over the last 2 or 3 months have not played particularly well, and I just, you know, I cannot see anything other than an Arsenal win. The goal difference has taken another boost. You know, that when it gets to this stage, certainly goal difference, it's an old cliche, I guess, but it can be an extra point, and Arsenal's, you know, could actually, you know, have such a healthier goal difference that might be crucial in the end. It's, you know, I mean, we talk about the M word, momentum. You know, I think it might be overrated, that word, at times, but Arsenal have certainly got some going with them. They really have.
They really have, yeah. They are playing well from a position whereby, you know, before they went to Dubai, you know, they were struggling for goals. Everyone's saying they needed a centre forward, just couldn't score. And then basically went to Dubai, had a reset in their winter break, and they've basically just been back scoring goals for fun. 31 goals in 7 games. I mean, it's
incredible. You know, listen, it's astonishing. I mean, you can look at the opposition and, you know, and how the opposition have performed in those games. But, you know, they've been made to perform that badly by the way Arsenal are playing. They look good. They look sharp. They look fit. You know, I don't think really the outcome of the game next week against Porto will have much bearing. Even if they get through, I think they can cope with the extra games. If they get knocked out, then, you know, if they can get over that disappointment mentally, you know, they'll have less games and be fresher. So, yeah, honestly, it really is. As I say, Liverpool for me, but so close to call. That's why hopefully it's going to be one of the great title run-ins.
Yeah, and we've still got meetings, you know, between the club. You know, clearly, you know, Sunday is one. Arsenal yet to go to City. Arsenal got, you know, sort of away game at United, Tottenham. Yeah, it's a lot there, isn't there? And the fixture schedule, Andy, I do think the fixture schedule must come into it at some point. Liverpool still going on four fronts. You know, they've got, you know, away trips in Europe, got one this week. It's, you know, it's really, yeah, it's
yeah, in, injuries could play a part. If for example, in Prague, Liverpool were to pick up, you know, a knock or two more to go on to it, I agree. Also, you're right about the fixture schedule. I mean, then games start having to be rearranged. You know, there's no confirmation, for example, of when the Merseyside derby will be, which has to be rearranged because of Liverpool's FA Cup commitments against Manchester United on Sunday week. And that could be absolutely fascinating. You know, there is a suggestion that it will be, you know, in the last week of the season will be Everton-Liverpool. And bear in mind, Everton-Liverpool, then we could be in a situation where, you know, Liverpool might need to win to keep their title hopes alive. Everton might need to win in a battle against relegation. You know, Klopp's last Merseyside derby. You know, it could all, you're right, it all could change. The one thing I'd say, though, which I guess slightly contradicts what I said earlier, the more you say it and how good form these three teams are in, and now you mention about, obviously, City, Arsenal need to play each other again, and we've got Liverpool City this weekend, you know, maybe these games are more pivotal than I first said, because at the moment, you can't see, you just don't see, do you, them, either, any of these teams losing to anyone else. I mean, they can, obviously, you know, and they have up until now, but you just think to yourself, you know, every time now, you expect them to win if they're not playing each other. But they probably won't, you know. I mean, look at City, you've got Arsenal, and they've got Villa, haven't they? You know, who beat them at Villa Park earlier in the season, and who are flying, you know, and who have, you know, some great informed players. And also that battle it's not much of a battle, I guess, but between Villa and Spurs, they can both play a part in the running themselves.
I mean, they do, Villa and Spurs do meet on this weekend. I mean, what a game that is now in the battle for fourth. And I'm sure that United will be looking anxious as well to see whether they can, you know, maybe gain ground, you know, this weekend. That's the one. But I mean, really, Villa and Spurs, who do you think will end up finishing fourth and get the guaranteed Champions League place, if you like?
I think Villa. I think Aston Villa. I'm hugely impressed with Aston Villa this season. Hugely impressed with the manager, impressed by the setup, impressed by so many players in that team. Listen, you know, I like Spurs, and who doesn't like, you know, Big Ange? So, although whether or not he was London's manager of the year, I'm not sure, pal. But that's
I don't know quite how that happened. That was a bit surprising.
It was a shock. But anyway,
I think a few people watching press conferences rather than being in them, I would say, if they're London.
Probably. But mate, I am massively impressed with Aston Villa, hugely impressed by them. You know, to me, they have so far, if the voting was now and stopped now, I would be voting Ollie Watkins for Footballer of the Year. You know, I think what he's done as, in a way, even though his figures have been, you know, well publicised, I think he's just been an unbelievable performance this year. He's such an important cog in that team. He's an unassuming guy. He does so much work that's actually not noticed, as well as the goals and the assists. I think Douglas Luiz is fantastic for that. I mean, there's so many. Look at John McGinn, how he's played. Whatever you think of him. He probably rubs most people up the wrong way, but the goalkeeper is quite
inspirational. John McGinn.
Sorry, no, right, him as well. And you know, and they've had injuries. Don't forget, you know, they have had injuries to Pau Torres, to Tyra Mings. You know, so they've had crucial injuries, and they've coped with them. I like Villa a lot. I really do, and I think they've got something going there. In fact, again, it's a big if nowadays in terms of, you know, their financial figures have just been published. And there's big, big losses. And obviously immediately now in our new landscape, what we all know about PSR now, don't we? You know, probably a couple of years ago, if you said that to a football fan, what's PSR? You know, goodness knows what he thought it was. And now we're all aware of it. So all of a sudden now when Villa's financial results get published, our immediate reaction is, right, who are they selling? No, who's going to be sold? And if people are sold, that would be a blow. You know, I think the talk of Douglas Luiz, you know, and another couple of their crown jewels. However, if they don't, and if Villa can keep this team together under Emery, you know, I genuinely, one, I think they'll get fourth place this year. And two, I would expect them to be up there again next year and possibly, you know, trying to challenge the top three now. The only caveat for next year would be if they did get Champions League football. History shows that it's a big ask for a team that's just going back into Champions football in their first season to combine them both. You know, I always think it had an effect on Spurs, that. So, but yes, mate, I like Spurs and I like the way they play. But to me, Villa will get that fourth spot and I'm hugely impressed with what they're doing.
My reading of that, by the way, the Villa figures, and I hate to basically put accountancy before football, but basically my reading of that was them on the front foot the other day when they kind of put out a summary of the financial figures, if you like, almost as a press release, didn't they, to kind of counteract suggestions that they would have to sell. You know, that was effectively what I thought they were trying to do. I mean, you know, they've clearly... you know, they'll clearly have to rein it in. But the previous year, they did make the point that they made a small profit, you know. And so, basically, you know, and things like that. So they're trying to put the counter-argument. Clearly, it means then that, you know, if they're going to strengthen again this summer, they'll have to be very careful because they know the boundaries over the 3 years, if you like, you know. But, you know, yeah, it'll be...
I know. But exactly, you know, you see clubs posting losses of, like, 100 million plus, and you think, well, how can they... How can they stay within the rules when you're only allowed to lose 105 over 3 years? Well, actually, it's net losses. It gets complicated, and it's and that's it. You know, we're talking accountancy rather than. And while we agree that, I think we both agree that you know there are some the regulations are needed. It is a bit when football financial, you know, expertise has become as important as chief scouting, mate.
The final game that we sort of have a little look at, Man United Everton on Saturday. Are you doing this one, are you?
I am, yes. Man United Everton, yes. Early kickoff Saturday. You know, it's probably a game and an opponent that United need after that. Everton aren't playing particularly well. They weren't that bad from what I understand. I didn't go to the game against them, West Ham. But I believe they were okay. Missed some chances. I mean, Everton have missed chances this season. You know, I don't want to get into go too deep into expected goals, but the XG has been okay, and they're not finishing chances. That much is clear. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, you know, is high up on the list of strikers who haven't, you know, basically who've missed a lot of chances. Beto, it seems as well, although he did score, he did miss a penalty. Everton winless, I think, in 10. Not playing particularly well. Not got a great record at Old Trafford either. Probably the opponent that United need after Sunday's surrender at the Etihad, really. You know, there wasn't really much competitiveness there, even though they were 1-0 up half-time. Just the game probably they need. Having said that, if you remember their last Premier League game at Old Trafford, I was also at that one, and Fulham came in and not only won, but won very deservedly. Every game's a big game for Erik ten Hag right now, isn't it? You know, I mean, we're reading every day about, and this is fine, you know, this is that it's okay. We're reading every day about who they're going to recruit in the boardroom or wherever, or on the training ground. We're reading about Owen Barada, obviously, Dan Ashworth, suggestions of Dougie Freeman, other names now being linked. And listen, I'm all for getting a great structure in the top office. Yeah, I understand you need that. But, you know, there comes a time when you can have too many chiefs. You know, and if you've got, we're seeing a Jim Ratcliffe, a Dale Brailsford, a Dan Ashworth, an Owen Barada, a Dougie Freeman. I mean, this is a different subject to Saturday's game, but you're almost getting into the, I think running things by committee has its issues. And I think what Sunday's game showed for Manchester United is, yes, clearly there needs to be a structure above the team, a structure upstairs and on the recruitment side of things that's getting things right. They obviously need that. They obviously need, in the way that City have that structure in, they obviously need that. But, mate, they need some better players as well. I mean, they need a better squad. And, okay, the people in place, then they need people in place to pick those players, but they need a better squad. And, of course, what they need to make a decision on, I keep going back to that interview that Sir Jim Ratcliffe did with a few journalists, you know, where he said it would be Champions League football next year would be really helpful, especially in terms of PSR. Well, they're not getting Champions League football next year. That's not happening. It's not happening. Listen, they might be in with a squeak of overhauling. I think it'll be Spurs for fifth place, and then hoping that Premier League teams get a fifth spot, which isn't certain. But they're not getting it, mate. And I genuinely think that you know, every game now is massive for Ten Hag. If, indeed, Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Dale Brailsford haven't already decided what Ten Hag's fate will be this summer.
What do you think, Andy? Do you think if you know, first game of next season, is Ten Hag in the dugout? Personally, I think no. I'll be honest. I just feel sometimes, I think it's almost better to, and this, you know, even if Ten Hag was doing better than he is now, exceeding, you know, sort of kind of current targets, expectations, I think sometimes it's just so damned obvious that basically a new era starts with who I think should always be the most important person at the club, and that's the manager. and then basically, you know, start with a new broom, whoever that might be, whether it's Graham Potter, whether it's someone more, you know, kind of sexy to sort of kind of, you know, set the agenda for the fans. Let's see. But I just feel as if, you know, this is almost playing out as the end game. It's the, you know, it's the beginning of the end, and it started, and frankly, it would almost be better for all concerned, you know, with a fresh broom. I actually think that Ten Hag did a great job in his first season. Terrific, really good. But then second season, you've got to question about the Champions League results and performances, because that's so important to a club. It's so important. And then when you let those standards down, it's going to basically have a knock-on effect, you know, in Premier League terms, and sort of expectations and confidence and belief, isn't it? And sure enough, it has. I mean, this season has been woefully inconsistent. It's been a season of highs and lows, and frankly, I think they probably need to you know, have another look at another manager personally. But what do you think?
I couldn't agree more. I wouldn't say I couldn't agree more. I think you're absolutely spot on. Do I agree with people who might think that Ten Hag should go? No, I like Ten Hag, and I think it will be harsh for what he did last season, and have been some mitigating factors this season. However, I think you're right. If your original question was, will Ten Hag be in the dugout for the first United game next season? And I just can't see it. If only because, you know, it is a new regime. You know, they are sweeping clean on the positions of power. You know, they've got Dale Brailsford in, Dan Ashworth will come in, the new CEO, Omar Berard, is in, and others may be. So Jim Ratcliffe talked in those interviews about adopting a style of play that the coach will play. You know, Ten Hag is already in there playing his way. And I just can't see, you know, I didn't expect Ratcliffe to be overly committal to Ten Hag's future, but he was so non-committal. It was like, you know, you almost felt then the writer was on the wall. Since then, you know, Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Dave Brailsford, while I don't think Ratcliffe's been to a game, however, what they have seen is Fulham play Manchester United off the park. Not just Manchester City, by the way, Fulham. You know, played Manchester City off the park, and Manchester City did what everyone expected, and that was basically to win what turned out to be pretty much a training ground exercise for Manchester City. Sir Jim Ratcliffe didn't get where he is. You know, you guess without making decisions. You know, and we can see that with the way he's made the decisions in the boardroom so far. So he didn't get where he is by thinking, well, I'll tell you what, we'll just give him, you know, a bit more time. He doesn't. He sees, he thinks, he acts. The idea that this was probably a bit of a soundbite, but okay, we want to try and be competitive with City and Liverpool. Never mind, knock them off the perches. We'll gloss over that, but be competitive with them within 3 years. Well, if they don't get Champions League football next season, which I don't think they will, then that's a massive, like, you know, setback in that 3-year plan. I generally just think that I feel sorry for Ten Hag. I like him. I mean, how many Premier League defeats this season now? 11, is it? Something like that. You know, you're looking at a lot of games lost. You're looking at a lot of demoralising defeats. And I just think a new regime, the most important man will be the coach, as you say. And it wouldn't surprise me if they... I don't think it'd surprise a lot of us if they've got someone in mind already. And actually, it's a good point you made, John, about best all round, because, you know, I think if they do make a change and Ten Hag is replaced at the end of the season, I don't think he'll go away with his reputation, you know, particularly tarnished.
Yeah,
I really don't. I think he'll be seen as a victim of circumstances and of things behind the scenes, you know, that have made his job really difficult. And I don't think he'll go away with his reputation particularly tarnished.
Completely agree. I do think he's done well in the circumstance, to be honest, you know. So let's see. Right, Andy, thanks so much for joining. Thanks, everyone, for watching. And see you sometime soon.